serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Divinely Inspired Living with award-winning author Deborah Moffat. For a light-hearted exploration of life, love, and relationships. Here's Deborah.
Welcome to Divinely Inspired Living. This is Deborah Moffat, inspiring you to trust your inner wisdom through conversations with people who live with purpose and passion. So the question today is about dominators and partners. And here to explore that with us is Dr. Rianne Eisler, who is the author of Power Partnership and also The Chalice and Blade. And she's also the founder of the Center for Partnership Studies. And this is such an important conversation right now because there's a growing awareness that something in the world is not working, that the systems are not working. And one of the things that Rianne has said is the struggle for our future is not between East and West or North and South, but everywhere between those who believe our only alternatives are dominating or being dominated. And for those working for partnership relations of mutual respect, accountability, and caring. Welcome to the show, Rianne.
Pleasure to be with you.
So tell us more about dominators and partners and this division that you have perceived and what's happening in the world right now.
I have based this system of classifications on about 30 years of research comparing different kinds of societies, Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern, capitalist, socialist, right, left, and religious, secular. And I began to see patterns that really are not described by our conventional categories, which is that regardless of those old categories, what we really are seeing are societies that orient to what I call a domination system or more to a partnership system. It's always a matter of degree. So what do I mean by a domination system? System of top-down rankings, man over man over woman, race over race, religion over religion, man over nature, and so on. Whereas in a more partnership-oriented system, what you have are the institutions and the belief systems that support the kinds of relations that we also want and need, relations of mutual benefit, mutual accountability, what I call hierarchies of actualization rather than hierarchies of domination, where power is used to empower others as well as oneself rather than to control and to dominate. And if we really look at what's happening in the world today, we're seeing globally, whether it's so-called religious fundamentalism, whether it's what happened in the United States election, whether it's, some of what's happening in Europe, all over the world, we're seeing a regression to the domination side.
Yes.
And our work is to really understand what's happening, not get distracted by what seem like simple fixes, and understand that we've got lots of work ahead of us to reverse this.
Your work for me is so, so important, and it helped me to understand things that I was perceiving but had no language for. And this is one of the really important and beautiful things about your work. I could see it in my childhood patterns in terms of the family relationships, in terms of my marriage. My ex-husband had this attitude of dominator. I couldn't understand it until I stepped away from it. And then there was no language until I picked up, thanks to Mark Allen's suggestion, the power of partnership. Can you tell us more about the origins of this? Because it really is not, it really goes back into our childhood.
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, because actually The Power of Partnership is a book that was published by Mark Allen's company. Mm-hmm. It really looks at seven key relationships in our lives and how they're very, very different depending on the degree to which they orient to either side of this partnership domination scale, this continuum. Of course, we start with how we relate to ourselves. And so many of us have been taught, well, there's that voice, isn't it, in our heads that says, oh, you're no good. Oh, you're doing this wrong. Look at so-and-so and they're doing things. Why aren't you doing that? Well, those are the voices that we've internalized, and it wasn't our parents who made this up. I mean, they were just perpetuating what I call dominator child rearing. And this is a very serious thing for us all. But it, and now let's jump to some of the other relations, it really affects how we relate in our intimate relations. You know, you mentioned that it started in your childhood and then you married a man who really was familiar in his pattern, wasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's, we learn to think that there are only two alternatives. You either dominate or you're dominated. We don't realize that there's a much healthier, more pleasurable, more equitable partnership alternative. Well, to continue with the relationships, then, of course, there are workplace and community relations. But then, because, you know, the power of partnership was awarded, was named the best self-help book of the year when it was published. And certainly, you know, the first three relationships are what is usually covered by self-help books. But then it goes on, and it goes on to four other relations and shows how they're all really interconnected, how we relate to our nation, our international relations, our relations with nature, with our Mother Earth, and our spiritual relations, and mm-hmm. how these all differ. And once, as you said, it's very empowering, once we have the language and the understand the patterns. It was very empowering for me doing this research. It answered many, many questions. I mean, for example, if you look at some of our religious scriptures to jump to spirituality, what you see is this core of partnership relations, a spirituality that is a unity, caring, compassion, do unto others as you would have them do unto yourself. And then there is this dominator encrustment that was acquired through historically, really, that is a completely different thing, right? You know, very punitive, very mean, violent, suppresses women and the so-called feminine. But you can't sort it out unless you have these two categories, can you?
No, and it was very remarkable to me, the dominator who functions through threat and fear as a means of getting others to comply and, of course, take control over. And then the pattern of partnership, which is, as you said, equitable, encouraging, nurturing, encouraging creativity, is just so important. And also, I love the way it leads to the caring economy, which you call the caring economy.
Well, you know, I wrote another book on that subject. It's called The Real Wealth of Nations, and the
yes.
subject is Creating a Caring Economics. Mm-hmm. And we really have inherited from both a capitalist and socialist theory. They not only came out of early, early industrial times, and we're now in the post-industrial age. So on that count alone, they would be antiquated. But they also came out of times that still oriented culturally much more to the domination side. And so one thing that was so very striking, you know, using the templates of the partnership and domination systems, is in the domination system, women, the female half of humanity, and anything that we have been taught, because this is not a matter of anything inherent in women and men, but taught to associate with femininity, caring, caregiving, nonviolence, is devalued in domination systems. So we have inherited, for example, measures of so-called economic health, like gross domestic product, gross national product, that don't even include as, quote, productive work, the work of caring for people, starting in early childhood in homes, in families. For both Marx and Smith, that was just reproductive work. And so also were the life-sustaining activities of nature, without which we'd all be dead, right? Well, we've got to care for both nature and for people starting in early childhood. And that's what a caring economics or partnerism is all about.
I remember one of the eye-opening, for me, reports that was put out by the UN. It was one of the UN development reports where they included the cost of caring in societies. And I thought that was really, really remarkable to see the value of it actually added into a report, which is so rare. Now, my big question for you, Rhiann, is how do people who are in the dominator model work together with people who are in the partnership model? Because this seems to be what we're confronting more and more as society is evolving at the moment.
Well, let me back up for a moment to what you mentioned, which is I want to tell you about an Australian study that showed that if they work done for free in households, which is by and large caregiving work, caring work, and they measured the value of the care work, which is primarily performed by women worldwide, if it were part of, this is an Australian study, if it were part of the Australian GDP, it would constitute 50% of the reported GDP. So we're not talking about some minimal thing. We're talking about a massive omission that distorts everything in the economic system, okay? And I think one of the main reasons worldwide that women are so disproportionately poor, I mean, like in the United States, in this wealthy nation, women over the age of 65, according to U.S. Census figures, are twice as likely to live in poverty as men of the same age. And it isn't only gender discrimination. It is because most of these women are or were either part or full-time caregivers. And we don't have the policies that most European nations, in fact, all Western European nations have, paid parental leave. We don't reward this work with any social security credit, nothing, right? And that has to change. So I really wanted to make that point because it's so vital for all of our lives, women and men, and it's vital for children, and it's vital for our economy, because if we don't, in our post-industrial era, really find ways to value and reward the work of caring and caregiving, we're in deep trouble because jobs are disappearing, right? And that takes me to your question, which is what's happening today. I'm sorry to take this long detour, but I
know this is very important. Yes, it is. And I've also seen recently a report in Switzerland as well, where it would be something like even more than 50% of the Swiss economy if that were added to the GDP, the caring economy.
Right. But it is precisely because you were talking about what's happening, the regression to the domination side worldwide. There are various reasons for it, but in the West, one of the major reasons is the move into the post-industrial age, when automation, robotics, artificial intelligence are replacing so many jobs, millions and millions of jobs in manufacturing, which used to be, thanks to the union movement, well-paid jobs. They've disappeared, right? You know, today a factory that employed 1,000 people can be run by a handful of people because of that. So the people are frightened, and this is something that people who are brought up in rigid domination families, you know, where basically the father is master of the family, right? And you're totally dependent on this punitive person, they tend to vote for somebody like that, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we saw that, well, we saw that, for example, with the Arab Spring not so long ago. They voted in the Muslim Brotherhood, which, if anything, was even more violent and more repressive than the regime that they toppled. We see it, unfortunately, today with the election of a man who basically, you know, I mean, demeaned women, the feminine, wherever, and really this is very important, you know, because we're talking about a gendered system of values, aren't we?
Yes.
Where anything associated with women is held in contempt. You know, caring, caregiving, nonviolence. Scapegoating was a motif of the campaign. And violence was condoned in the rallies. And this man presented himself as knowing, being the only one who can solve the problems, which is absolute nonsense. But this is very dangerous. And so what I've presented in my work, and it's already there, in a sense, in The Power of Partnership and in The Real Wealth of Nations. But you can also go to our website, which is centerforpartnership.org, for cornerstones that we really have to work on, because the people pushing us back really worked on them. You know, that there are studies showing that this notion that the father is master of the family, more people subscribe to that today than they did in the 1970s.
Wow.
That happened by accident in the United States, okay? That happened because of a concerted campaign of the so-called religious fundamentalist rightist alliance to push the culture back, and they were very successful, weren't they?
Yes, absolutely. So how can we work with people who are partners? How can we work with dominators? Is that possible? That's what I find as in my own life as a question when I'm confronted with people who are in that situation, who want to dominate and want to control. And I like to work inequality in an even open partnership with people, and it's difficult.
It is difficult, and in some cases it really is impossible, because some people have been so really damaged by the domination system that, well, I sometimes say some people are hermetically sealed, and you know, so there's no point in trying to go against that. But with many, many people, you can find an entry point. For example, a lot of people today are caring for children in the United States, are caring for elder parents, are caring for sick people, for somebody disabled, and they have no government support. That's an entry point to a caring economy, right? To saying, wait a minute, really there are ways that public policy needs to address this problem that you're having in your life. And there are policies that help, paid parental leave, caregiver tax credits, you know. We have in the United States child tax credits, but we don't have, but the caregiver is invisible, right? So we have to, first of all, show the value of care work. And as we show the value of this so-called feminine, soft care work, we change the culture, don't we?
So,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, I love how you made a distinction between the way people find it's okay in the dominator culture to pay for military spending and things of that nature, and then to begin to change the economic, the thoughts about how we think about and create economy and value the things that have to do with caring and nurturing and education in a more visible way.
Well, you know, the fact that we are so rapidly moving into the post-industrial technological age, of course, is a crisis, but it's also an opportunity because the old ways just simply aren't functional. They're not working. In fact, if you really look back, and I look way back into history, but let's just look at modern times, the movement from the Middle Ages, you know, the Inquisition, the Crusades, the witch burnings, you know, they looked a lot like the Taliban, right? I mean, very, or like
yes.
ISIS, very dominator, rigidly domination-oriented. To today, when, you know, the concept of human rights at that time, I mean, you know, what? There were no human rights. Women had no rights. Children had no rights. Nobody had rights. To today, it happened during a period of disequilibrium caused by the much slower industrial revolution, right? Because things weren't working and there had to be some changes. So today we have a crisis, but we also have an opportunity to really move to a more caring democracy and a more caring economy. And however, this isn't going to happen by itself. And as you said, this is why this work is so important. And I so want to invite our listeners, go to our websites, go to centerforpartnership.org, go to caringeconomy.org. You will find many resources. We offer webinars. I offer a webinar with 4 videos on changing our story, changing our lives. We are just starting next week our Power of Partnership webinar, which I will also be teaching. But it is not only that, you know, awareness and action are interconnected. So the more that we ourselves change, the more effectively we can change our, you know, really the culture that surrounds us, so that, you know, we hear so much about healing ourselves, right? But to heal ourselves, we have to heal the culture.
It works both ways, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it works both ways. And the exciting thing is if we, as I said, sometimes I say it as a joke that when I get really depressed, I think of the European Middle Ages. And I think, well, we've moved, haven't we?
That's the optimism. And you, of course, were very inspired and transformed by your fleeing of Europe during the Nazi period, right?
Well, I was a child refugee. I mean, my parents fortunately managed to get us out. But, yeah, I mean, I was very influenced by that. We lived in Cuba. We're one of the last ships that was admitted before one that was turned back, where 1,000 Jewish refugees had to go back because no country in the Western Hemisphere would accept them. And really, it's very important for us to understand, and this is vital at this time, that dissent does make a difference. We can change attitudes, difference. We can change attitudes. I mean, how do you think we...